You're listening to The Holdcast with Jack Grimsey and Robert Lintott.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 106 of the 7500 to Holdcast. I'm Jack Grimsey alongside Robert Lintott. Robert, it's good to have you back. Missed you last time when we were talking about Villa's social media.
So glad to be back. We've missed each other the past few episodes, so I'm glad that we're finally back to the way it should be.
The funny thing is, Villa are still unbeaten. Like, would you believe it?
We say that quietly.
Don't worry, I already jinxed it on the interview I did yesterday with John McKenzie. He brought some Leeds insight to the pod. That's who Villa are playing this weekend. So we're going to recap the recent Aston Villa happenings. Then we'll have that interview with John. And then Robert and I will talk about the Leeds United fixture on Saturday for just a little bit. That in just a moment. All right, so where were we, Robert? Villa still unbeaten under Steve Bruce.
Could this team be good again?
Actually good.
I've been thinking this for a couple of weeks now, but I'm really nervous to actually buy into it. Because every time we've thought the Villa were going to be good again, they've kicked us right in the nads.
Okay, but this is what really sticks out for me is prior to Steve Bruce's tenure, 7 games so far, we've won 4 of them. Mm-hmm. It took us 49 games to win 4 in the stretch before that.
Yeah. I guess that's the thing. It's the proof is there. Bruce has just totally gotten out of this club what we would expect. And, I mean, he's already done... Oh, yeah, I'm really just totally unsure of what to think of this.
I hope he can keep the run going for 11 matches just because that's how many we had before. With Di Matteo and then Steve Clark, and in those first 11 games, Villa were picking up 0.91 points per match, and since then, they've been getting 2.14.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, it's this kind of pace that, you know, if they keep this up even remotely, they'll be within a playoff position before too long.
Before too long, like you're saying. I calculated it when Bruce came in. I think His average points per match in the championship throughout his career is like 1.78 or 1.8 or something. And I extrapolated that over the course of the season. And if Villa picked up that many points per game on average, they would have ended in 6th in last year's championship table and 6th, I think, in the year before. I think I only looked at 2 years. But if they could do that for the whole season, they'd be in a playoff position and... we're getting 0.3 points per game more than that. So
yeah, absolutely. It's if you look at what we've got coming up, we've got Leeds this weekend. The following weekend, we host Wigan, who are trash. And then you've got a visit to Norwich. And, you know, Norwich are just a little bit above us. They're about the same level.
But they were in the top three for a while. They're starting to fade.
Yeah, it's true. But the thing that just sort of boggles my mind is we were so mired in mediocrity and you know, down in the relegation consideration even, and we weren't bottom three, but we were close, and everything was horrible, and now it's really possible, even with a loss in those 3 games, to foresee a way in which Villa might be in the playoff spots by our match against Queen's Park Rangers.
Yeah, you know, if you're winning, you know, when you draw, a point kind of gets taken out of the equation. Both teams get a point. A win, you get 3. And if you are winning 1 game and losing 2, it's the same as drawing 3. Yeah. And under Steve Bruce, Villa aren't going to be averaging out a win and 2 losses over 3 games, you know?
Yeah. I think we probably lose sometime soon.
It's inevitable. It has to happen.
And I mean, this weekend might be the weekend. So if you lose there, and then if you say win against Wigan and Norwich, that's 6 points added to where we are. That puts you at 31. That might be just outside the playoff spot. But, you know, it's really possible that by Christmas, let's say that, it really would not stun me if by Christmas Villa were in the playoff spot.
No, not at all, because what's that, 5 more matches?
Yeah. Wait, 3, 4, yeah. The 5th is Boxing Day. So okay. 4 more matches. So I think going into New that Year's. Boxing Day match, we could be in a playoff spot.
Yeah, you know, there's still so much congestion in the table. It's only Rotherham United, who are 11 points adrift of second bottom. Oof. That's miserable. You know, if and then if you go to Cardiff, they're 11 points adrift of Leeds, who are in fifth. So there's as much of a gap between 5 and 23 as there's between 23 and 24. They're already done.
God, Rotherham. I mean, the funny thing is, there's so many games, they really aren't done. If something happened...
They're stuck with the majority of their players. I think they're done.
Yeah, I don't see how they can get out of it. They've got to be gone. But, you know, maybe a Steve Bruce comes along for them.
Yeah, hopefully not our Steve Bruce.
Yeah, no, no.
Hashtag not my Steve Bruce.
Can't have him. He's ours.
So yeah, let's get back to that Cardiff game. And we were talking about Dr. Tony a little bit before the episode. I think you probably saw the video of him going berserk in his box. It was great.
I mean, yeah, and why wouldn't he? They scored three goals, for heaven's sakes.
Three pretty good goals.
Yeah.
With the Amavi assist of his Villa career, dare I say.
I mean, yeah, three goals. It brought the goal differential up to three positive. At Villa Park, the fans actually got to see scoring. The fans got to see an exciting match. The fans got to see a match that Villa never were behind in. You know, they scored the first goal in the 24th minute, and then it looked like they might Villa things up by conceding in the 28th. And then Koja said, nope, in the 39th, scored and made sure that it was going to stay in the lead. And Villa kept that lead.
Yeah, and I think it was annoying because it was Ricky Lambert. And I don't even know if fans hate him because he didn't come to Villa, mm-hmm. or if they just hate him because his name's Lambert. Either way, I'm okay with it. And what was the celebration? He was shushing the crowd or something whatever. But we shut him up. And of course, it was Koja.
Yeah. One of my favorite things about this match was Steve Bruce afterwards talking about it. He, I had the quote pulled up here. This is only the first shoots of a recovery. We're hopefully heading in the right direction. And it's like, that's exactly what you want to hear. He's done amazing. He could sit back and say, this is what I can do. We could probably finish eighth or ninth and you know, be pretty comfortable going into next year. But no, he's saying, no, this is just the beginning. We're going to do way better.
Yeah, and, you know, I saw another quote from him. It was like, I've been waiting for this job for 20 years. So you can tell he's really fired up. And the thing that's about Villa that's not like the other jobs that he's had, like Hull or like Blues, like they're not going to be in the Premier League for a long period of time with possibly a lot of money to spend, you know. And at the end of the day, Villa is a much bigger club than them.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
But no, like you're saying, still very refreshing to hear. And it's good stuff. So,
Rudy just dead.
Yeah, Rudy just dead. Finish it off with a penalty in the 90th minute. And we'll probably save this for another episode, but something came out today on the Birmingham Mail that was saying, someone said, I'm not worried about losing Koja for AFCON in January. You know, I already tried this take when he came to Villa. And it didn't work because he is really good now. You know, we need him. He's essential to the team.
Yeah, he is. It's going to be tough to lose him for a little bit.
Longer that they keep playing like this, the goals will start coming from other sources like we've seen. And I don't know, somehow Gabby can figure out how to score again.
Maybe. I mean, I feel like we should have let Gabby take the penalty.
Oh,
just so he could have.
What if it was like, okay, remember the promotion playoff match a couple years ago? I think it was Watford, and I don't know who they were playing, but I don't know. Maybe it's Watford Palace or something, but someone missed a penalty at one end in like the 90th minute, and it went the other way for like the winning goal. Like, what if somehow that happened?
God.
Because of Gabby.
I could see that happening to Gabby. I like the idea of Steve Bruce just telling Gabby, all right, you want a chance to play in this team. Here's the penalty. If you miss it, you're done forever.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm a big believer in absolutes like that and holding grudges forever, so definitely would be a move. You know, it's like in Football Manager, you make three subs in the first half because you're just pissed off.
that would be my style, but that's what I would have wanted to see with Gabby. Like, all right, you want a chance at redemption, here's your first step. If you screw this up, we're done.
Yeah, for sure. But speaking of Koja, he's won the PFA Player of the Month award for November. So congrats, Jonathan. Well deserved.
Yeah, and he's just been a man on fire. I keep saying it. He's Villa's best player this year.
Was there a Manager of the Month award?
I don't know. I would think so.
I know there isn't the Premier League, but, you know, I could... There's no way I couldn't see it going to Steve Bruce.
I mean
what, Chris Hughton's at Brighton?
Yeah, I mean, you could see that. You could see, you know, heck, Reading is on a streak of five wins in a row. And if it weren't for their most recent loss, Newcastle has 8 wins, 1 draw, and a loss in their last 10.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like of the, certainly if it was for the season, maybe Newcastle's manager will get it if they go wire to wire.
Yeah.
Top, but just looking at the recent, just the month, like, I mean, then again, just the month they could have had more points, but
yeah,
coming into the month versus where the club ended up at the end of the month.
We have not had one announced for November yet, but there is one.
Okay.
The October one was Rafa. Okay. And it seems to have been announced around November 11th last year. So we've got probably a week to wait or so until we actually get to hear who the November one was. But it very well might have been.
It's going to go to the dubious goals committee.
Yeah, I think, it, you know, Steve Bruce has a pretty good shout for it, at the very least. I think Reading probably have a stronger claim on it. Why can't I pull their manager's name off the top of my head? But yeah, I think they've probably got a stronger claim. 5 wins on the trot is nothing to thumb your nose at.
No, no, not at all. Yeah, one last point, I guess, wrapping up the recent Villa stuff. How about the midfield? It was a really big concern, I know, especially for me. But Westwood, Jedinak, last game, fantastic. Tidy, efficient, you know.
Yeah, and Jedinak is finally doing what we thought he would, which is settling down and starting to control things.
Yeah, and it's having definitely a positive impact on his teammates.
Yeah, and so it seems like his revival really started under Steve Bruce. And I mean, you can say that for the rest of this team. To me, the single biggest question is, what is Steve Bruce doing differently than Di Matteo was doing? Like, you is know, it just his jovial attitude? Is it the fact that he seems to smile a lot? He doesn't look like a James Bond villain? I mean, I really want to know what the difference is, because obviously this talent was there. It's not like they manifested new talent out of nowhere. So what was the change? I mean, obviously it's the change in manager, but why? What's happening? What's different? I'm really curious, and I'm sure we'll never know.
Yeah, it's not like the personnel has been so much different, and even the formation, I guess. I mean, it's not, you can't say, I know his tactics by saying this is the formation they play, and they play the same basic shape, but, you know, the tactics is way more than that. But, you know, not that much has changed, really, on the field.
Yeah, except the level of play.
Yeah, exactly. But from who's been out there and what it's looked like a little bit, because I don't know. They have belief now, and they're able to put the ball in the back of the net, I guess, and it's like they've got rid of some demons or something that maybe, I don't know, Di Matteo have like a voodoo doll or something he brought with him, and now it's gone, so
Steve Bruce, you little known fact, is actually a Catholic priest. He came in and performed an exorcism.
Yeah, that brings you back to your old joke of
he was vomiting.
Yeah, well, maybe now that's what they needed, because your old joke was Villa cross like a Catholic with no arms, and they actually score from crosses now. So maybe that's what you need. Yeah. Anyway. Grealish in attacking mid in that center creative role, playing the number 10 behind the striker, and Adoma, it's great to have a proper right winger.
Oh, heavens yes.
To have an actual winger, because Ayew on the left, I mean, he does the job and sometimes he scores, but he's not a left winger.
No, he isn't.
And neither is Koja. And yeah. One of them is getting stuck there, and, you know, it's okay, because, you know, we're winning, but I would rather like swap IU or something at this point for like an actual winger.
Agreed. But that may be for January to figure out.
Yeah, or later, or, you know, buy another one, because I'm still happy to have IU in the squad. But yeah, anyway. Oh, sorry, one more thing about players. James Chester playing with that broken nose against Cardiff.
I mean, yeah, I can't believe that he did that. And he's been what we sort of hoped Tommy Elphick would be.
Yeah, exactly. And it's okay that one of them turned out how he did and the other turned out how he did, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you buy those multiple players. It's remember when we thought Tommy Elphick was going to be the leader of this squad? And he really hasn't been.
Yeah, I don't know how his Bournemouth teammates, like, carried him, basically, because that's what it seems like. He seems like he's totally not at the level. Maybe he just declined the past year, really. Maybe just last year he really had a steep decline, because he was playing every game for Bournemouth, and they stayed up. You know, they went up and they stayed up.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's a little bit strange, his
situation.
But, you know, the Chester-Baker pairing has looked really good.
It has, and hopefully Baker didn't pick up a head injury against Cardiff because he was subbed off. And we never really heard what it was, did we?
But I haven't heard any follow-up, so I assume he's okay?
Yeah. I mean, I assume they'll play anyone who's got a concussion the week before, because that's how sports work. But, yeah. Someone else who's been playing, Alan Hutton. I want to wish him a happy birthday. That was yesterday, actually.
Hey, Hutton is now 1 year older and probably just as bad.
He's now 32.
Yay. Hey, that's almost as old as I'm going to be. Wow, I'm the same age as Alan Hutton nearly. That's depressing.
Well, yeah, I don't know what to say. He won't be at Villa forever.
I mean, eventually we all have to die and move on.
Yeah, but Leeds' left side could give Hutton trouble. That's what I was seeing someone tweeting, I guess, during Liverpool's matchup with Leeds United, which was in the League Cup the other day, so we've got to watch Leeds ahead of that. But before we get to that, just going to talk a little bit about Dr. Tony. Went and visited the Birmingham Children's Hospital yesterday or 2 days ago, I guess, when you're listening to it, last week maybe. But, it's good to see that.
Yeah, absolutely. He's trying to make some sort of an impact, trying to be some sort of a presence in the community. And it's in such stark contrast to Lerner. Or at least Lerner in the later years.
Lerner had the partnership, I guess, with Acorns or donated that, but I don't know, that could have just been for tax reasons, too.
Still wish we would have Acorns as our kit sponsor.
Yeah, maybe just going to have to... I guess they could put QuickBooks on the kids' ones, because they used to put Acorns on the kids' kits. I was going to say, you're going to have a child, Robert.
Yeah. Just so I can have an Acorns kit?
Yeah.
Oh, damn it. It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of money.
I'm not sure it's worth it.
Those kids' kits are still like $70, and that's going to be like the cheapest thing you're going to have to buy. Oh my God. That's like a lot of months of this podcast to pay for that. So thanks for listening to our ads, everyone. But yeah, you know, like you're saying, contrast to Lerner, and even if Tony is just trying to get some good PR, I don't think that's true, because he's a very busy man, mm-hmm. and has a lot of very expensive, I guess. I don't know. What's a better word for that? Very lucrative businesses and things like that and stuff. So it's good to see him going to try to cheer up some kid.
Absolutely. And you know, hopefully this is a regular thing. I hope the players start getting there. And, you know, some of them already do. Some of the players are already doing good work in the community.
Like Rudy.
Yeah, exactly. And I hope this just becomes standard. I want Villa to be a great football team, but I also want them to be good people too. And that may be asking too much. But, you know, if we can have both, boy, would I like it.
Yeah, maybe too much to ask from everyone, but certainly some people can contribute off the pitch as well. So next up is the interview I did with John McKenzie. We talked in detail about Leeds United. I am with John McKenzie, who writes for the Square Ball and is a Leeds United fan. John, how's it going?
Yeah, good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Great to have you on. I know we've been talking about this actually for a couple months.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to speaking to you.
You're like, yeah, whenever Leeds play Villa, you can have me on your podcast. I was like, all right, definitely will do. I don't think we've had a guest actually in quite a while. But yeah, anyway, it's good to have you on. And you're telling me a little bit about the Square Ball. Sounds like it's a pretty good Leeds blog.
Yeah, the Square Ball is a fanzine. It's been run by fans for about, I think, over a decade now, and it regularly wins awards. It's won the Football Supporters Federation Award for the last few years, and it combines good writing with good artwork. So it's actually a fairly impressive publication, and I've really enjoyed writing for them because most of the time I'm writing more general stuff for publications. So it's been really nice for me since Leeds United have obviously dropped down the divisions to have something to write for.
Yeah, I know. I guess I kind of know you more personally from writing at Get German Football News. We write for them. We both do. So yeah, GGFN, if you've seen them on Twitter. But yeah, and some of the other stuff you do, the crosswords for the Blizzard, right?
That's right, yeah. So I'm regularly working with Jonathan Wilson, which is a real pleasure for me. And a sort of in there as well. I edit the crossword for the Blizzard, so I get all of the submissions in. And I do write crosswords for one of the national newspapers in the UK, but this is obviously football themed, so it's a bit more of a guilty pleasure for me.
Yeah, more fun than work. Doesn't always feel like work, I guess. But yeah, anyway, getting back to Leeds, how long have you been a Leeds supporter? Your whole life?
Yeah, well, since I've ever supported football teams, I started supporting in the early 90s, just after Italia 90, because my parents went to Bradford University, settled down there in between Leeds and Bradford, and a lot of the kids around there ended up supporting Leeds or Bradford. And obviously, with Italia 90, everyone was football mad, and that's when I got into football and decided I was a Leeds fan. So since then, I've sort of been, I wouldn't say on and off, it's been more difficult to support them while I've been further down the divisions. And when I was an undergrad at university, I was in Scotland, so it was a good long distance away from Leeds. So my football support for Leeds then was made a lot more difficult. But here I am still, all these years later, still pretending to care.
Yeah, still through it all, I guess.
That's where you guys are at now, right? So
yeah, that's really all I've known from Villa, as being a supporter since like 2008, 2009. So just been downhill basically. But yeah, I mean, at least I guess now there's more TV coverage than if, say, Leeds would have been in the second division even back when you started supporting them, I guess.
We've had a period of about six games in a row that are all being televised. So I think starting with Newcastle, perhaps, and then we've had obviously the game against Liverpool that's just gone, and then we've got you guys this weekend, and I think another fixture with you guys a little bit further on, and then Brighton as well, I think, coming up. So yeah, we've been quite lucky in getting more fixtures than I can remember for a long while. So that's nice.
Yeah, I watched that League Cup match yesterday, and although Liverpool didn't have all of their top stars in the lineup, it was still a quality team that they had to go up against, and ended 2-0 in Liverpool's favor. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I was actually at the game.
Yeah, sorry.
So, but I was watching it in the cop because I couldn't get hold of away tickets. So, not that I'm
secretly support Leeds. You're the inside man.
That's right. Yeah, my girlfriend is a big Liverpool supporter, and her dad used to live on Anfield Road, so he has a lot of connections with people from Liverpool. So we managed to get three season tickets in the cop. So I went undercover for the game. I thought it was a good game. For 70 minutes, Leeds gave a good account of themselves. They probably had the better chances, and they're going to probably regret missing some of the good chances they had.
Yeah, especially in the first half, I thought.
Yeah, the Hadi Sakho, or winger, had a pretty gilt-edged chance early on, and then Kemar Roof hit the post, and there was one or two other chances, but I think there was always the feeling that Liverpool were going to score, the quality is going to show through, and they did get the goal, and then they had the one at the end just to polish it off and make it look like they comfortably beat us. But yeah, for 70 minutes, they were very much comfortably. Leeds were very much comfortably on top, and I was actually quite surprised because we made a few team changes. We didn't have necessarily our strongest team players out, and so I don't know how Gary Monk, the manager, got around that, because I can imagine most of the first team players would have wanted to play in that fixture. But we gave a good account of ourselves, and we played a couple of youngsters in midfield, who were an 18-year-old and a 20-year-old, and they gave a good account of themselves. So I was pretty positive after the game, to be honest, even though we lost.
Yeah, and Chris Wood didn't start. He's been the star of Leeds this year. He has 9 goals in 18 championship matches, and then he had 3 in 3 cup games going in. So 12 goals already for him, but he came off the bench, wasn't able to make that impact.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, I mean, this is very much a purple patch for Chris Wood. He's never been a prolific goal scorer. That may simply be that he's never really played in teams where he's been a provider. And one of the worries...
But he's taking his chance as well, you know?
Yeah, he is. And it's good that that's happening, but he is very much having a run of form. And I'm worried that when he loses that run of form, which he inevitably will, the goals are going to dry up a little bit for us. So that's one of my worries. I'm a bit of a Chris Wood denier in many respects. I think he's obviously playing well at the moment and scoring goals, so he's popular with the fans to a certain extent. But he is a very much a Marmite figure, which I guess do you have that phrase in America, Marmite?
No, I don't even know what that means, to tell you the truth.
There's a savory spread in the UK, which
people... Oh, I think it's called Marmalade here.
Okay. Marmalade's different.
Oh.
Marmite is a sort of yeast spread, sort of black, sticky stuff, and you put it on toast or something, and people either love it or they hate it. So if someone's a Marmite figure, people either love them or hate them. There's no middle ground with them. So
opinion divided.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not convinced that he's going to be everything that we need to get us up into the Premier League, but he's scoring goals at the moment, so that's very good for us.
Yeah, I wasn't convinced by Jonathan Kodjo when we signed him because of his past record the past two seasons in second tier football, but now he's lighting it up under Steve Bruce, so I don't know, you never know, hope for the best.
Mm.
But like you were saying, Leeds don't score a whole lot of goals, just 21 on the year, which is the same as Villa.
Yeah, I think part of the problem is that we've been mixing our midfield up a little bit. We've got a couple of first team players who've struggled with injuries this season. And then Gary Monk has been fiddling around a little bit with the formation. Well, not the formation so much as who he's going to play in the three of a 4-2-3-1.
Certain roles. I mean, they are interchangeable, but...
Yeah. So we've got Pablo Hernandez on loan from some Middle Eastern club, but he was obviously famous for playing at Swansea, and he's a great number 10, but he's injured at the moment. He makes a huge amount of difference for us because he does a huge amount of link-up play between the double pivot that we have and then Chris Wood, the striker. But we're missing him at the moment. So we've had Kimar Roof playing there, who is really... He was an out-and-out striker at Oxford, but... Has been being played on the left wing for us a bit more. He's been playing quite well at number 10, but it's meant obviously that we've had to experiment a little bit more with who we play on either wing on either side of him. So we've been, at the moment, we're bringing Stuart Dallas back, who was a bit of a stalwart for us last season. And then we've got Hadi Sacko on the right, who's been pretty much a regular feature for us. But then in the double pivot as well, we've had injuries. We've got Liam Bridcut, who we've recently bought. We had him on loan last season. We bought him from Sunderland, and he's been brilliant for us, but he struggles with injuries. He seems to have something wrong with his ankle, and we miss him. He's such an important player for us because he's a ball-winning midfielder, and he recycles the ball brilliantly. And then alongside him, we've got Eunan O'Kane, who we bought from Bournemouth over the break, the summer break, and he's been struggling with his groin all the time. He came off against Liverpool as well, so I have no idea who they're going to actually play against you. And that very fact sort of says everything you need to know about Leeds at the moment. They can field a fantastic side, or they can field a bit of a nuts and bolts team from the youth squad.
Yeah, I mean, what, Gary Monk, he's just been there since, what, June this summer, so still getting used to some of his personnel, you'd have to imagine, but he's had a pretty decent time of it so far, and he's actually brought over a couple players from Swansea as well, like you mentioned, Pablo Hernandez, and then... Who else is it? Matt Grimes and Kyle Bartley.
Yeah, Kyle Bartley is an incredible player. Everyone's obviously talking about Pontus Janssen at the moment, who we've got on loan from Torino. But he's brought in Bartley as well, and Bartley is the same, if not more important than Pontus Janssen. He's just a fantastic centre-back. And both guys are 6'5". They're absolute colossus of men. And they...
That's what you need in the Championship, really.
Yeah. Yeah. What Monk has done is he's solided up our defence. And that was where we were going wrong. And I think any team that lives by Chris Wood dies by Chris Wood. And you know that he's not going to score a huge amount of goals. So you have to be able to protect narrow margins and narrow leads. And that's really what Monk has worked on doing.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to see. I mean, the goal difference for Leeds is only +1. It's and 20 goals conceded, but 21 scored. And it has them in fifth place. So 29 points. And I don't know. I think Leeds have kind of been like the anti-Villa. Or anti-Villa, as They have 9 wins and 7 losses, just 2 draws. Villa with 5 wins and 3 losses, but 10 draws.
Yeah. I think you've obviously had your problems with managerial issues, and you've got a new manager in. I think drawitis or whatever you want to call it is often the result of that.
I don't know. We had it in the past too, like when you were saying you'd had enough of watching Villa, so you weren't watching them this season. You had enough of it the past few years.
It was a bit cruel. I mean, last season was not particularly a highlight for Villa fans.
No, not really.
Fans around the world, but I think Leeds has a similar problem with drawing. I mean, it's not really transpired in that way. We've been fairly lucky or unlucky in many respects. We've either got late wins or late goals or conceded late goals, and so the draws haven't happened. But very much the problem with Leeds at the moment is they just aren't creative enough going forward. We're not creating enough dangerous chances. And I think that's where Monk has to really think long and hard this January in terms of bringing in transfers, because we do struggle to we do create chances, but we're not creating enough, and we're not creating good enough quality chances. We're very, very well organized. You'll have seen that from the Liverpool game, but we are that, just that. We're very well organized, and you know, you need
it's to... it's almost as if players are instructed too much to stay in their positions and don't really have the freedom. Yeah. Maybe
it may be the case, yeah. And I think the reason Monk's done that is because we very much weren't that way beforehand, and we needed that.
That's what you needed, the rigidity, for sure, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, I cut you off, but...
No, it's fine. I was simply saying, you know, that we lack a sort of creativity and spark, which is why Pablo Hernandez has been so important for us. There's flashes of that from Kemar Roofe, but he's very young, and he's been playing in League 2. Until this point, so he's very much on a learning curve at the moment. So it might be nice to sort of bulk up that area for us.
I'm seeing that Hernandez's loan is up December 31st. Do you know if they're looking to extend that or maybe buy him permanently from...
Yeah, and we've got a few players on loan who everyone is worried about losing. So Carl Bartley as well, and Pontus Janssen. So a lot of the fans are saying if this takeover that there are rumblings of taking place is to take place, then these loans need to be sorted out. The same with Gary Monk and his staff, because I think they're only on a 1-year contract. There's lots of things for a new owner to sort out should that be the case. And I think those loans are very much also under scrutiny too.
It's something you want to do sooner rather than later, those contracts, especially with Gary Monk, because, you know, if he takes Leeds to fifth, regardless of what happens in the playoff, he could be an attractive candidate for some Premier League sides or other top division sides, you know, and they'd let him, he would be walking for free.
Yeah, I think Gary Monk is, no one is can doubt his credentials. I think he was unlucky to be let go by Swansea when he was. He had a good season, had, I think, the highest points total for a good long time in the Premier League. And had a win percentage that was unmatched by anyone until, I think, Brendan Rodgers. And obviously Brendan Rodgers had a huge stint in the Championship as well, which plays wonders with your win percentage. So he's a decent manager. I've been a firm supporter of him from the off, because he's a different level from what we've been getting. And we've obviously had that sort of manager sweepstake going on the last few seasons, where we were just working our way through just unacceptable managers really very quickly. And you know, with Monk, that you can just see it. He's been here for what, like 16 games now in the league, and it's just been brilliant, the change that you actually see in that time. So it's very much important, I think, for the team, the club, to sort out that contract, because like you say, he's going to get snapped up, and if we don't have a decent contract in place, he's going to go for next to nothing.
There's probably not going to be money to spend in January, are you thinking?
I'm not entirely sure. Again, it depends on the ownership issues. I suspect if we're still in the playoff places and we haven't sold the club and Chelino is still the majority owner, then I suspect that he might be tempted to spend some money, simply because I think this will be the best chance we've had in years to actually get back into the Premier League. And there might be the recognition that it will just make the club so much more lucrative for him.
Yeah, you know, even 5 million in the right place can do a lot. You know, one or two players, maybe somehow that could help you out.
Yeah, I think so.
And you only overspent what the transfer values received this summer were by what, 2 million. So it's not like you spent a whole lot. Like Villa in the summer, there might not be money if they're worried about financial fair play or something. I don't know.
Yeah, Monk's very shrewd in the transfer market. Almost every transfer that he sorted out this summer has turned out to be a great player or very important to the squad.
Yeah, I'm sure those loans are pretty cheap as well.
Yeah,
compared to what you're getting for
as well. Yeah, certainly Pablo Hernandez is not going to be costly. And I mean Pontus Janssen is a brilliant player. He would fit into the Premier League. I'm fairly certain. Carl Bartley as well was almost out of contract. They have renewed his contract at Swansea because they know that Leeds are going to put a bid in almost. So they've tried to bump as much value out of him as they can. But again, any player who's nearing the end of his contract going out on loan presumably is a fairly cheap snip. So
yeah, especially if he was going to run out of contract at the end of the year. He is 25, so he could go on a Bosman. But yeah, so anyway, I guess back to the game. Final thoughts. You have a prediction?
I think that the Liverpool result can only really be good for the team morale. Despite the loss, obviously they acquitted themselves well, and proved that they can play with injuries and young players, cope with that even on a big stage. So I think that there's a certain amount of momentum with the team at the moment, and they just seem to be snatching results at the moment. So I think for us playing at home, there'll be a certain amount of expectations for this game to, I think, judge how well we are actually playing at the moment. Because I think there's a certain account of amongst Leeds fans of this being a little bit of a fluke. You know, we've got up to fifth through a fairly easy run. We've not had to beat anyone that big, and whenever we've come up against a big team, we played Newcastle obviously recently, we lost to them. But at the same time, I think there is a rumblings in the club that actually what's going on is something that's different from what's happened before. Obviously we've not been this high for ages, but actually when you're watching us play, even when we're losing playing well. So that was noticeable against Newcastle. It took a Rob Green clanger to really determine that game. And it could have gone either way until that point. So I think the fans will be expecting at least a draw against you at the weekend.
Yeah, you'd hope so, playing at home and the way you've been playing.
But yeah, it could be a win, and it could be the beginning of a real belief. I think that this is the season we're going up. That said, I think again, who knows what the League Cup game will have taken out of them, and there may be a certain amount of resting on laurels and expectation that actually the Championship is too easy for us. And so, I mean, that's a very wussy way of answering that question. But I'll say that I think that Leeds will win by a 1-goal margin. But that might simply be me fresh from Anfield, feeling more positive than I should.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm going to say 2-2, I think. I can't see Villa losing kind of now. Not, I mean, I shouldn't say that because I can, but I think they'll keep the run going and make it four wins, four draws under Bruce.
Yeah.
Should be good entertainment either way. Maybe Leeds can find that cutting edge.
Yeah, and it should be interesting to see how the two teams match up against each other. It's sort of both teams are sort of at a point where no one's entirely sure how good either of them are. So it might be good for them to play each other just to try and determine that a little bit more.
Yeah, I think it's kind of lucky maybe that Villa lost in the League Cup earlier this season, so they didn't have to deal with that distraction, because this is a pretty big match.
Yeah.
So, all right, John, I want to thank you for joining us. You can follow him on Twitter at John_McKenzie. Check him out. Check out his stuff that he writes. It's actually in a lot of places, so it's not just about Leeds. All right, John, thanks.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
All right, I hope you enjoyed the interview. Robert and I are going to wrap up the podcast and talk about Villa's game against Leeds. So Saturday, 5:30 local primetime matchup. It's a nice one for you, 12:30 in the afternoon on the East Coast.
Yeah, I actually thought I was going to have to miss the match because I have to work on Saturday morning, but I think I'm done at noon. So
that's ideal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know they're watching in Chicago at the Globe, but I'm not going to be able to go. I think I'll probably be doing Bundesliga stuff in the morning and doing maybe stuff for 7500 to Holt, actually, during the game. So it'll be fun. And the best part is that it's going to be on TV, so
we can watch them. Which means we're probably going to get stomped.
Yeah, probably.
That's how this works.
At least you won't get stomped by the overrunning El Clasico fans at the Globe Pub. It's always the busiest day. Yeah, so it's going to be on Sky in the UK and Ireland, or available to stream on BN, on BN3, I believe it is, for the first 15 minutes of the match, because something else overruns it, but then it's going to switch to the main BN channel. So you can watch that, most of it at least.
That's not confusing at all.
No, not at all. It's funny, I was talking about it with John, but the reverse fixture, Villa against Leeds, is the 29th of December, so
yeah,
that one also will be televised, so
yep, we
get to see a lot of Villa Leeds.
Yeah, you get all the Villa Leeds you need in December, right? I hope your advent calendar had that spot a few times. And Leeds are going to be tough competition. I don't like the fact that we have to play them twice in a month. They've had a pretty darn good start to the season, sitting fifth, 29 points, plus one goal differential.
So weird. They have the same amount of goals as Villa.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is a little bizarre. And they have way more losses than Villa do. They're sitting fifth because of 9 wins, 2 draws, and 7 losses, as opposed to Villa's 5, 10, and 3. The obvious difference there is the fact that they've won almost 10 games.
Yeah. So sometimes it's better to have a win and a loss than 2 draws. You know, you're going to end up with more points.
Yeah, absolutely. And they seem to have done pretty well. Their last 5 matches, 4 wins and a loss, which is an incredible little run on form right there. We would take that.
That's even a better return than Steve Bruce is getting.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is, you know, kind of crazy, because Villa have, 11 from 15, and they've got 12 from 15. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
But it's not so good that I'm overwhelmed, that I'm terrified of this match. The only thing that really makes it kind of worrisome is the fact that it is an away trip.
Yeah, it is. And Villa's home form is a lot better than their away form, so...
Yeah. And you know, it's starting to feel like Villa Park might actually be a place where people want to play now.
Yeah, and I think that's going to have a big impact going forward, like, especially if we can go up. If you can turn that into a fortress, then you can stay up.
Yeah.
Because you could reasonably win 10 out of 8, like 10 out of 19 games at home in the Premier League, you know. If you're super good at home, it's possible that you could do that, and that's 30 points right there.
Yep, exactly. But I think Villa have a real shot at this. You know, same number of goals per match, like you said. Obviously, Villa have allowed fewer, since we've got the better goal differential. I think the key to this one is going to be making sure that defense stays locked down, that we only allow one goal or so.
Yeah, I think it might come down to shutting down Chris Wood, who has 43% of Leeds' goals, 9 this season in the championship.
Yeah, with their second best scorer having 2. Those are positively Villa in the past couple of years numbers.
Yeah, seriously.
It's, you know, that's not great there. But if you can shut him down, it appears that they really don't have much going for them.
No, and he didn't start against Liverpool the other day, came on as a sub, but was unable to get anything going. Maybe they were saving him for the weekend, but John was saying that Chris Wood's in a really good patch of form, and he's worried that once he loses that, the goals could dry up for Leeds. It's, like you said, their second top goal scorer has just 2 goals.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think this seems like a match where if I go in and Villa get a draw, I'm certainly going to be happy with that outcome.
Yeah, I think keep this little run going. Take a point on the road if you can do that. I predicted 2-2, but I don't know. I could see a Villa win. I could see a Leeds win.
Yeah, I think it'll be... I'll buy 2-2. That would make me pretty happy, too. See Villa's offense doing good, the attack doing okay, and the defense not just melting down. 2-2 at Leeds is a score that I could respect and be happy with.
So yeah, 2-2, that would be entertaining for the neutrals as well. I think most people would be pretty happy with that. I think that's all we have for you today. I want to thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed the interview with John. Remember, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, wherever. And you can follow Robert on Twitter at 7500Robert. You can follow me at Jack Grimsey. And you can follow John at John_McKenzie. Robert, any final thoughts?
I'm good to go. I'm just ready to hopefully actually get to see a Villa win.
Yep, hopefully. But hopefully you don't jinx us by watching it. So Thanks for listening to the Holtcast. Goodbye.